right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and here sitting at my left is the wonderful Zilpha Larson. Hey, Zilpha.
Hello, John. Hello, everybody.
Hello. And today we've assembled another amazing panel for your consumptive pleasure. First of all, representing the home team is Brant. Hey, Brant.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. Happy Sabbath to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's always good for you to spend a little time with us, and help the world see that not all believers are crazy.
I try to do what I can.
I get accused of representing the believers as being crazy for some reason, and you're here to help dissuade that awful bigotry.
Absolutely.
That's foreshadow. Okay. And also, speaking of bigots, we have Randy. Hey, Randy.
Hey, that's a nice introduction. Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, welcome back. You're representing Zion for us.
Well, I'm actually a member of the most hated group in America, which is next to rapists, according to a recent study.
Well, but what about Christian rapists? They probably come in higher than the atheists, don't they?
Oh, of course they do, because they can repent and accept Jesus.
So. All right. And This is almost like two in a row for you, Bob. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I like how we didn't actually say Randy's an atheist. We just sort of let the imagination run wild of all the listeners. Like, figure out what is worse than rapists.
It's radio. It's the theater of the mind.
That's right.
Yes, definitely. All right. So today we are going to do a sort of a top 10. This is somebody else's top 10 that we're going to pick at. on January 8th, 2012, the organization Mormonvoices.org released a top 10 anti-Mormon statements of 2011. Of course, with Mitt Romney and John Huntsman in the primaries for the presidency, things like Book of Mormon musical. More focus has been on Mormonism of late, and which has got the apologists and defenders of the faith arming for bear. So this is an article that was published by them and then picked up by the Deseret News, who covered it basically. I don't know what's the news term when you just take whatever they give you verbatim. We used to call it something in marketing. I can't remember. But
syndication, maybe, or
the marketers, you know, like the Voices folks just handed the Deseret News this article, and they just wrote a puff piece around it. They didn't challenge it at all, is what I'm saying. The Deseret News didn't look at it sort of objectively and present the other side. So we're right. Going to do the Deseret News a favor, and let's take a deeper dive into what's here in the top 10 anti-Mormon statements of 2011. All right. I think the place to start here is to figure out who these Mormon Voices people are. Mormon Voices is a relatively new endeavor that was launched last year, 2011, and it was originally called the Mormon Defense League. Dun dun dun! Like that? Do they have a secret lair?
It's like Marvel Comics.
They're little tights.
Yeah. And they quickly changed the name, presumptively. Well, when they first rolled out, they had a lot of language that would be reminiscent of the, like the Catholic Defense League or
the Jewish Defense League.
Some of these organizations that are organized to fight basically bigotry against, religious organizations out there. The problem I think they ran into right away is if you look at the site, and we invite everybody to go out and look at the site is mostly about Mormon doctrine. It's not about, it's not really about bigotry towards Mormons. Because I'm just going to throw this out here at the top of the podcast. That's extremely rare. I mean extremely rare.
Like bigotry against Mormons is extremely rare?
Yeah, like organized bigotry against Mormons. You'll find a lot of articles in Utah that, just like you would in any state, where people will crash rocks through the church or spray paint graffiti on the walls. The follow-up you usually don't see is it's oftentimes a 17-year-old son of the bishop. So when they roll that story out, you know, they tend to sort of fanfare. Oh, look, here's bigotry against the church. But it tends to be inside jobs when those sort of things happen. Angry teenagers. So that's why it's difficult to necessarily characterize hate crimes and bigotry, because sometimes it's not as organized, like Ku Klux Klan sort of thing, as people would have. And I will say this after we get through this top 10, I'll challenge y'all to think back on this list. Do these things really represent bigotry? And I'm saying right here, in all 10 cases, no, they don't, none of them represent bigotry at all.
Well, John, let me ask you this. Do you think there ever has been cases of bigotry against the Mormon Church, like legitimate bigotry, yeah, or you think it's all just, because I agree with you to a certain extent, but.
Well, let me say this. I say yes. But there is a nominal level of bigotry towards everybody. Right? It's not
That's
like,
not you.
It's not like the default bigotry is zero, you know, like nothing. So you have to show more bigotry than everybody else has. I'm not trying to excuse that behavior, but like, no matter what race you are, there's people who are racist against you. So every race, runs into a certain amount of bigotry. Every, religious group or non-religious group, you know, being a Unitarian or, you know, let's say a Pure Land Buddhist or so, you know, something where you're very lightweight religion, there's people who are bigoted against that. So like, there's a nominal amount of bigotry that gets directed in every direction. So if you're just calling foul over that, it's not really noticeable. It's not really something special.
Should we, look at the definition of bigotry?
Please. Do you have it there?
Yeah. Well, according to the Merriam-Webster Online, a bigot is a person who is obstinately. Yes. Or intolerantly devoted to his or her own opinions and prejudices, especially one who regards or treats the members of a group as a racial or ethnic group with hatred and intolerance. So basically it's being pretty stuck in your own opinion and also treating members of a group with hatred.
And I think it's important to call out that the first part of the definition is first for a reason. So it's more about what you think and how other things disagree with that. So Mormonism can just be a proxy for any disagreement for said bigot or whatever. So that's the other thing we have to make sure to parse out, that we're not calling somebody a Mormon bigot specifically, because it could just be that they're just a bigot in general, if that makes sense.
Right. I consider myself a low-level racist, but I'm racist equal to all the races. Like I think low of every race.
Including,
so you hate everybody.
Caucasians.
Yeah, it's not real strong, but yeah, all of them. So,
wait, wouldn't that be like bigoted against humans?
Yeah, that's it. That's my bigotry.
Low level.
But wait,
low level.
Implied in the definition of bigotry is that you're wrong, right?
Obstinate. If you're obstinate about your own opinion, like not being
you can't
able
to be reasoned with.
You're unwilling to listen to evidence.
You
to
can't
the contrary.
Look at the other side's perspective at all, because you don't really even think the other side's perspective is worth looking at all.
And I think we all understand bigotry because we all had grandparents, right?
It's true.
I first heard the term colored people was from my grandma.
Well, that was a polite way of saying
it
way
but
back.
It was just unusual. For a kid who grew up in the 70s and 80s, we didn't call them colored people.
Oh, right.
Right.
It sounded racist to me as a kid, I guess.
So, and we'll get into the specifics of what we're talking about, but there has been a shell game among, Mormon apologists that I've called them out on before, which is to take theological disagreement and try to run it under the banner of bigotry. And the prime example of this is just the very term anti-Mormon. Now, if I say anti-Jew, or anti-Catholic, even those two things mean something different, because Jewish people are a race of people, and there is a long, storied, bloody history of attacks versus the Jewish people. And people may argue there's the same thing with Mormons, but oftentimes the Mormon battles went both ways, you know, like the Battle of Crooked River or things. I mean, they were both shooting it out. They were both burning down houses. So it's hard to call a war an act of bigotry. But my point is they will take any criticism and then slap the label anti-Mormon on top of it, even against people who are ostensibly culturally Mormons themselves. And that's something you would never see like Jewish people doing. They would never label another Jew anti-Semitic is what I was in linguistic school. anti-Semitic. Because I mean, that's ridiculous at its core. So they've taken the definition of anti-Mormon, stretched it so wide that it is a ridiculous mockery of itself.
Well, and they take it as like, if you have a disagreement with the beliefs or even mock the beliefs that you are mocking the Mormons rather than their beliefs. I think there's a distinction.
Well, there's a three-way shift, right? There's Mormon belief, Mormon doctrine. There's Mormon people. And then there's the church, which is a corporation. And they will shell game those three.
Right. It's the same to them.
So someone can criticize, let's say, a lawsuit or something like that. This happens all the time. You can probably scan the papers and find this, where the Mormon church will buy a piece of property to develop a church or a temple. Local community leaders come out and say, we don't want that area is residential. We don't want it rezoned to have this 8-story temple that's lit up at night. And people will say, you are bigoted. You are anti-Mormon. Where that's a property zoning issue. You know, so that's where they play this game of shifting the blame around and making it seem sort of like racism or bigotry.
Right. Well, the people at Mormon Voices in this article, they said that bigotry, in their opinion, is statements which distort and belittle Mormon belief in order to marginalize Mormons is bigotry. Statements which distort and belittle Mormon belief in order to marginalize Mormons.
Okay, they have to have that second clause on there, because they can't say statements that distort Mormon belief is bigotry, because these guys are bigots through and through, because they distort Mormon belief, and we're gonna show you exactly where they do, on the verge of flat out lying. But you can't have that. You can't have it both ways. You can't say it's distorting if it is
to marginalize Mormons.
To marginalize Mormons. Because that's a weasel word in and of itself. Are Mormon missionaries who are going out and trying to, in Catholic nations and trying to baptize all these Catholic kids into the Mormon church, marginalizing Catholicism? Well, yes, from a certain point of view. So.
Well, they call it the whore of the whole earth.
The whore of Babylon, yeah. So this is, and we'll show you some more examples of this, where the church, or in this case, FAIR, likes to have it one way.
Wait, you didn't say how Voices is related to FAIR.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. How they like to call bigotry when something is done to them, but they'll turn around and do the exact same thing to somebody else and say, oh, that's not bigotry, that's religious freedom.
Well, just as a quick aside, you know, we're talking about bigotry and anti-Mormon material, and Zilpha brought up this whole concept of statements that distort and belittle Mormon belief. There are things out there that really do distort it to a horrible extent. It's one thing to take a documented statement and say, see, this is kind of what they believe, or take a statement and kind of shrink it into your own words. But it's another thing to just flat out lie. And there have been people that have done that. And I think, and I'll give you guys a bone here, that's the difference between a bigoted, not a bigoted, but an insensitive remark, or a coarse remark, and something that's blatantly anti-Mormon. And I think too many Mormons get upset if anyone says anything negative against the church or against their beliefs or anything like that. All of a sudden they say, well, that's anti-Mormonism, and that's really not.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is Mormonism has a huge persecution complex. And they're not the only ones. There are other religions that have the same sort of thing. But this sort of stuff, this sort of irresponsible journalism by the Deseret News and by FAIR, who owns this, feeds that fire. And what it does is it makes it so Mormons are unable to relate to the rest of the world. I pray every time I pray.
Wait, what was that, 7 years ago?
that Mitt Romney will become the president. Because the Mormons are going to flip their wigs every day as they have to put on their big boy pants and go interact with the world in a reasonable sort of way without calling, you know, bigotry every time somebody disagrees with them.
Well, but I think, go ahead.
Here's a problem I have. I think Brandt talked about a little, you know, touched on a little bit, was that evangelicals will often distort the truth because they have an agenda. And that Mormons can point to that and say, look, that's anti-Mormon. You have an agenda. You're distorting the truth. But I've said things to Mormons that are actually historical facts and they called it anti-Mormon. So they just lump everything in together. And so you can't even have in many instances, like a reasonable discussion about Mormon history and points of doctrine.
Yep. And that was kind of what I was talking about.
Okay. Well,
I was just going to say about, you know, Mormons and the Whore of Babylon, the Catholic Church, they used to belittle the Catholic Church, but Mormons don't understand Catholicism. So when they complain about evangelicals misrepresenting Mormonism, it's because the evangelicals don't understand Mormonism.
Mormons
don't understand other religions.
But let's not give them a pass. If you go search through Journal of Discourse and other writings from the 19th century, they will use the word papist a lot, which they understood was an insult in the 19th century. It wasn't like that was an okay term to use in the 19th century, then it became passé. It was an insult. And they would throw that around in conference talks. So they knew what they were doing when they were bigoted towards the Catholic Church. And it's sort of two-faced for the church to suddenly become so victimized when they like to dish it out.
Well, they always have been victimized and they always have liked to dish it out.
Yeah.
So let's get into what they
say. Well, let's point out one thing that I think is important. Okay, I've sort of skirted around that Mormon Voices is affiliated with or is controlled by or somehow in the family of FAIR, which is the foundation for
FAIR. I got it right here.
FAIR is when is FAIR?
Here, hold
Foundation
on.
For Apologetic Information and Research.
Okay. Yes, thank you. So the church really has a three-tiered approach to apologetics and doctrine. They first of all have the brethren who have not made a definitive doctrinal statement in at least 30 years. And that's by design. They do not comment on doctrine. Then they have Farms, which is wholly owned and wholly funded by the church. So they try to pretend, if you read Farm stuff, it says it's not affiliated with the church. It is wholly owned by the church. The church cannot get, I can't have own a company that owns a company that I direct and then say, hey, that's not my word. The church 100% owns Farms. So Farms is a little bit more careful, a little bit more academic. And then there's FAIR, which has been set up to be the scrappy dog on the schoolyard because they are not owned by the church. But the same guys who are in Farms and who meet with the brethren are part of FAIR. And Bob, you pointed this out. I'll read the statement from the Voices website. Mormon Voices is an independent organization that is supportive of, but not controlled by, or affiliated with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, Bob, you had an excellent point about affiliated with.
Yeah. So it's a semantic game, but they're wanting to have a stronger case than really is there. What they're trying to say is that we're not sponsored by the church. We don't have a direct line of authority. But they're very much affiliated because the definition of affiliated encompasses both formal and informal relations between organizations. And if you go to the FAQ on the FAIRLDS.org site, so the parent organization over the MormonVoices.org website, if you're following with me, it's all the same people. They really take pride in saying how they're in stake presidencies, bishoprics, Relief Society presidencies. They're active.
Yeah, I have the passage in front of me. It says, our members include bishops, members of stake presidencies, ward mission leaders, Sunday school teachers, Relief Society teachers, and nursery leaders. Many of the members were personally impacted by anti-Mormonism. Ooh.
Wow.
They had their houses egged by the anti-Mormonism. but I mean, to your point, Mormonism is a religion that is supposed to have a lay clergy, and this is the lay clergy. And what they're doing, they're saying, we are clerical. Because here's all the clergy who participates.
But there really are anti-Mormons out there. We should be clear that we're not saying that there aren't, and that there aren't people who are bigoted. There are people who are bigoted against Mormons.
True.
But yeah, we're just looking at this article and trying to see if these statements are bigoted against Mormons.
Yeah, not to give away the ending, but if for anti-Mormons and anti-Mormonism existing out there, these guys here did a piss poor job of picking the top 10 anti-Mormon statements, because really almost none of them are. This flavor of anti-Mormonism that Zilpha's pointing out. If you went back over the last 20 or 30 years, you could probably get a decent top 10 list of anti-Mormonism. But the fact that you can't get a decent top 10 list for all of 2011 kind of speaks volumes to how little anti-Mormonism there really is out there.
Good point.
Yeah, this list seems to be scraping the bottom of the barrel. And I think most responsible editorial staff of a newspaper look at this and say, this is all you got? I'm not going to run this thing. This is embarrassing. Right.
Well, and the list also comes off more as opinion rather than this is actual anti-Mormon bigotry. A lot of the things on this list were the writer's feeling or opinion on Mormonism, which is very different than something that's blatantly anti-Mormon.
Yeah. Well, why don't we've been dancing around. Let's
let's see what they say.
Let's take this one to bed already. All right.
Hey, John, just one quick thing. Just in case there are anybody from farms listening in on this, on the about page for mormonvoices.org, where it says that the site is sponsored by the Foundation for Apologetic Information and Research, or FAIR, not FARMS, is what I said before. Anyway, that link is broken, so if you guys could get that fixed, or you can just leave it broken and pretend like you don't listen to this podcast. Either way, I'm just curious.
Should they also put a caveat out there that they are not affiliated with Mormon Expression Voices? Because that's a big distinction,
that
too.
Good idea.
But we can use their same affiliated.
Oh, right.
You know, we have bishops and stuff who've been on our thing too. So, all right, we're in the same boat. Okay, top 10 anti-Mormon statements in 2001. Let me read you the introductory paragraph. Religious bigotry is unacceptable. Statements which distort and belittle. Is this the one you just read?
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh. Mormon Voices has compiled this list of top 10 anti-Mormon statements made by public figures in 2011. And we are going to go in reverse. Now, if you look at this article, it's actually pretty short. I printed it out. It's like 3 pages. And it has the statements and then the source. And then it has the footnotes, which is the best part. That's like the comedy section. All right. We're going to do these in reverse order in traditional, David Letterman style. So we're going to skip down, in a different order than they published them. But I want to read you the last sentence after they list the 10. It is our hope that this list will help others identify and oppose the ignorance or malice that formed these remarks. That is kind of an interesting sentence in and of itself, because if it's malice and you're opposing malice, it's almost like calling for a war of escalation. And then it adds this philosophical thing. If you're bigoted against a religious point of view, and then you're anti the bigotry, which is a theological question, aren't you really doing the same thing? It's just pointing in the opposite direction. So aren't they calling for a bigotry of the bigotry? I know that's sort of pedantic, but, you know, when you're in theological wars and you're debating about like the word of what Christian means, you know, like one side wants to say this is the boundary and everything else is bigotry if you disagree with our definition.
And
that's sort of a ludicrous thing, but it's something that they're pushing here.
It's that closed-mindedness of bigotry.
All right, number 10. Okay, so this one comes from Fox and Friends, July 17th, 2011, which I think comes from a transcript. That's why it's all sort of garbled here. The Christian Coalition, I think, could get a lot of money from that, because Romney, obviously, not being a Christian, ... And they have inserted in bracket another candidate. So the individual saying that by not going with Romney, because he's not a Christian, the Christian Coalition could get a lot of money for some political thing. So the statement in the context is not really that important, but it's...
Wait, that another candidate could get a lot of money from the Christian Coalition, but Romney can't because he's not a Christian.
Correct. I think that's what they're saying. This is sort of confusing. But the
so
whole
hate-filled. Oof.
The whole thing is they're saying Romney is not a Christian, right? They're saying matter-of-factly Romney's not a Christian.
Right. And then their defense.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has to do with the theosis.
No,
they say Mormons.
Wait. Not the theosis yet. On Christianity, you're skipping ahead to...
Oh, okay. So they say several times in this, they say Mormons are Christian.
Okay, so the bottom line here, and you can find a lot of stuff out there. Mormons have insisted that saying Mormons are not Christian is a matter of bigotry. I have in my hand the from the LDS newsroom, LDS.org newsroom, dated 21st November 2006, Dateline Salt Lake City. Request to news media. The Associated Press style book has recognized this difficulty and specified the term Mormon is a nickname that should be applied exclusively to members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that it is not accurately applied to any other person or organization. See entries on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. First of all, they're being dicks right there because they're using the name Reorganized Church of the Latter-day Saints when they'd renamed themselves Community of Christ. Oh, sorry, Zilf, I'm not supposed to call people dicks. What about companies?
Companies can be dicks.
Okay. Let me skip to the next paragraph. I'm going to skip a paragraph and then one down. In the public mind, the word Mormon has come to mean something very specific. It conjures up images of Mormon missionaries on bikes, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and Mormon Temple. It has become a synonym for members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Consequently, when Mormon is used to describe polygamous groups, it causes great confusion about our beliefs among the general public and frustration to our members, which numbers over 12 million worldwide. So the church here is saying you can only use the term Mormon to refer to the Salt Lake branch of the church, that Mormon is not rightly applied to anybody who believes in the Book of Mormon or the restoration through Joseph
Smith.
Or
thinks of themselves as Mormons.
Or thinks of themselves as Mormons. And they're saying that is because in the common mind, Mormon has a specific meaning. All right? That's what the church says. Christianity has a specific meaning in people's minds. It conjures up certain belief. For example, the symbol acknowledged worldwide of Christianity is the cross. Mormons specifically reject the cross, and you will be called into your bishop's office if you wear one to church. I can bring people here who will tell you that happened to them. And when people think about this, happens in poll after poll after poll, which the church combats. What people in polls say all the time: well, when we think about Christianity, we don't think about Mormons, right? Well, the church will use that same bullshit to say that's justification for them. For them not using the term, or for no one else using the term Mormon, because the public doesn't associate the term Mormon with others like the Community of Christ, but they will have a conniption fit when the same sort of people that are being pulled by the same pollsters say the same thing about Christianity. This is flat out dumbed down hypocrisy for them to say, you cannot use the term only we can use the term Mormon, but we can apply the term Christian. And I know we can get into a debate about whether or not Mormons are Christians. It's an interesting debate. There's two key facts here. Mormons do not pray to Jesus Christ, nor do they believe that Jesus Christ can forgive them of their sins. They only believe that God can do that, and God is not Jesus Christ. So those two things alone should give anybody pause as to whether or not Mormons are Christian in the common sense of the word. Given all that, it is obvious that some people might not consider Mormons to be Christians.
And
to call that
bigoted.
Bigotry is just ignorance on the highest level.
Well, one of the problems, though, is there's so much infighting even between some of these religions as to who's Christian and who's not Christian, who really worships Jesus and who doesn't worship Jesus. And it's all because a lot of these religions, and this is the thing that I'm going to plead to every one of the true believers that are listening. This is the thing. It's not so much that we don't believe in Christ and we don't worship Christ. It's more the fact that we don't subscribe to their brand of Christianity, so they're going to label us as non-Christians.
Correct.
It's just a different definition of the term. That's
exactly
all it is.
So this Fox and Friends statement, they're saying the Christian Coalition – And the Christian Coalition obviously will define Christianity the way they define it. Mormonism is not part of the Christian Coalition. So for the Fox and Friends news reporter to point out the Christian Coalition doesn't want to give money to Romney is a statement of fact. It has nothing to do with bigotry at all.
It's absolutely innocuous, too. I mean, I'm actually kind of weary of the whole debate of who's Christian, who's not. It's kind of like a couple of Trekkies arguing about Captain Kirk versus Captain Picard, but this is just basically a label that is used to draw a line around, you know, what a Christian is and who this Christian organization is going to give their money to. It's so innocuous that to call this bigotry is pathetic.
Well, it is number 10, so we'll give them that.
Yeah, but okay, we don't know if these are ordered in order of severity, but that's I like to think of it that way. Okay, number 9.
They numbered them.
This is also from Fox News. It's interesting that Fox is a culprit here. a lot of Mormons are big Fox fans. All right. Can you name the candidate? This is a quote. Can you name the candidate that's running for president that believes if he's a good person in his religion, he will receive his own planet? ... Would you vote for someone for president who believes in their religion? If he's a good person, he'll get his own planet? ... Do you want to get your own planet? It's a quote from Ben Ferguson, Fox 13 News, Memphis, Tennessee, July 6, 2011. First of all, to dig down to the Memphis, Tennessee Fox affiliate, is digging pretty deep. But okay. So,
do you guys remember when this came out?
That statement
did actually make national news.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Okay. So Brant, do Mormons believe that they will get their own planet?
It depends who you talk to.
I'm talking to you, Buster.
Oh,
Zophie, you better not edit out that big long pause.
Well, weren't we all raised as Mormons, so we pretty much know what we were taught?
You know you're walking into a trap, so you just as well roll over right now.
Yes, we do.
You know, when I read this statement, I kind of panicked and thought, okay, so after the Hinckley thing, where he said, I don't know that we teach that, and then after this, where they're saying, oh, this is bigoted because they're saying that we will get our own planets, I thought, are they not teaching this anymore for real? So I looked it up, and they surely are still teaching this in their manuals in church.
Do you have
an
example?
Actually, if they are de-emphasizing it, and obviously Hinckley de-emphasized it big time, and that's well chronicled. But from 2006 to 2011 in General Conference, they only mentioned the word Godhood like 7 or 8 times. Where they mentioned the word Godhood over and over all the time in the 70s and 80s. And even when they do mention the word Godhood in General Conference now, they quote like an older dead prophet like David O. McKay or Hubie Brown or Marion Romney. So it's not even their own words. And actually what they've done now is they've created a euphemism. Can you guys guess what that euphemism is?
Exaltation?
Nope. Instead of Godhood, they say divine potential.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, they are de-emphasizing it. I'll give you the exact, I'll show you precisely. Here's the gospel principles, which is published by the church. It's the official sort of statement of gospel principles and doctrine. It's the closest thing that Mormons have to sort of a catechism.
Isn't it taught to Mormon adults,
yeah,
like in Sunday school?
It's distributed to everybody. It's published by the church. It contains official statements of doctrine. The chapter 47, I'm looking at the 1978 edition right here. Chapter 47 under exaltation. So in Mormon theology, to become God is to become exalted. So if you read, you can find tons and tons, literally thousands of sources that will tell you that exaltation is becoming a God. So a brief review, and we'll get, is in Mormon theology, you're born eventually, you come out of intelligence, become a spirit child of a God. Then you come down to the world where you receive a body. If you are obedient to the church authorities, you will eventually follow on a path where you will get, as a man, many wives, and as a woman, one husband, and you will have lots and lots and lots of babies, spiritual babies in the eternities, who will then treat you as you treated your God. You'll be the God of their worlds. And that continues on indefinitely. So we have this whole genealogical, line of God. So the idea is to become a God of your own world and to have children and multiple planets. Now they might be being pedantic and saying, well, this is a planet. You'll actually have universes of your own, but,
more than one.
All right. What is exaltation? This is, page 289, chapter 47, exaltation. Exaltation is eternal life, the kind of life that God lives. He lives in great glory. He is perfect. He possesses all knowledge and wisdom. He is the father of our spirit children. He is a creator. We can become gods like our heavenly father. This is exaltation.
He is the father of our spirit children?
He is the father of spirit children. Sorry, not our. He is the father of spirit. So let me read that last sentence. We can become gods like our heavenly father. This is exaltation. It's the 1978 edition. Here is the 2009 edition. There is still a chapter on exaltation. What is exaltation? Exaltation is eternal life, the kind of life God lives. He lives in great glory. He is perfect. He possesses all knowledge and all wisdom. He is the father of spirit children. He is a creator. We can become like our heavenly father. This is exaltation. So for insiders, there's no difference there. They just took out the offending, we can become gods.
They just took that out completely.
Yeah. They say now we can become like our heavenly father. But they explain what Heavenly Father is. He's the creator of spirit children and that sort of stuff. So the doctrine is still there. It's just obfuscated a little bit.
Well, and I think part of the problem is that Mormons don't like outsiders describing our doctrine with their words. In other words, when somebody talks about our magic underwear, we're like, we don't have magic underwear. But yes, we do. We just don't use the term magic underwear. That's an outside term. And so it's interesting that the guys behind the site, Mormon Voices, they use the excuse, if you follow through their link and read their justification, they say, you know, if we search LDS.org, the official church website, for the phrase, in quotes, God with our own planets, it does not come up in any official Mormon doctrine or talks or anything from the last however many dozens of years. And of course it doesn't, because we don't say it that way, but we're talking about the same thing. It's just that we can't force the rest of the world to use our vocabulary.
And LDS.org only goes back to about 1971 or 1972.
1971, by design.
But if you put in exaltation instead of becoming a god, which means the same thing to Mormons, there's lots of sources for exaltation that talk about becoming a god and having your own worlds.
But Mormons believe that if they are exalted, they will by and by become exactly what God is. They will become a God to other people. And it's true that saying they'll get their own planet is an oversimplification for the point of parody almost. But it is contained in the idea. It is true, yeah.
Well, that's what ticks me off is this line here. He says, Mormons do not believe that we will become gods of our own planet. That's just a bold-faced lie.
Right. It is a lie.
And let me read.
And it pisses me off.
Really upset me, too.
Let me read. I've got the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, which was published under the auspice of the church also, under the entry exaltation. So it means not only living in God's presence, but receiving power to do as God does, including the power to bear children after the resurrection, which is God creating human beings. And then it just says you have to have a lot of faith and obedience to get this thing. So it's absolutely clear that this is still a Mormon doctrine.
Well, and they're teaching it in church to, like, the young men's manuals, the current ones that they're teaching has a whole lesson about exaltation. And in the young men's manual, it says to explain to the boys that just as Jesus Christ was promised all that the Father has, we can also receive all power and dominion, becoming creators of other spirits and worlds. This is what they're currently teaching Mormon youth.
And not only that, I mean, how many times did you guys make the joke or hear the joke in church, what you're going to have in the world you create?
Yeah, like, yes. Are you going to come up with other kinds of animals?
Well, I always made the joke that if there's not football in my world, I won't be satisfied. And I just made that joke all the time. And it totally, I believed. I was high priest group leader teaching that for 4.5 years. You know, we start to expound into the deeper doctrines. We did explore that kind of stuff all the time. We do believe that we're going to get our own planets, universe, sorry.
Okay, I wish we could just leave it right there. I wish that was the worst of their sins. But the footnote to this one, or their rebuff, this Mormon Voices thing, reads, and I quote, "Mormons believe in theosis, not the God of planets fiction as discussed by Mr. Ferguson." Let's discuss what theosis is, speaking of distorting other people's beliefs. I will read you, I'm reading right here from the Orthodox Wiki. And we can read from Wikipedia, whatever theology dictionary you want, that it'll all be similar. Theosis, is the process of a worshiper becoming free of hamartia, I guess it's pronounced. I'm sure I'm, which is being united, hamartia says missing the mark. Being united with God, beginning in this life and later consummated in bodily resurrection. For Orthodox Christians, it is salvation. Let me read you from the Wikipedia. In Christian theology, divinization, or theosis, is the transforming effect of divine grace. So basically, when you die and you're resurrected and you sort of unite in this worshiping state with God, then that's theosis. It's sort of this almost...
like a nirvana kind of thing.
It's almost like nirvana, but nirvana has in its core meaning the ceasing of the self.
That's true.
Right. But it is this holy state of forever having joy in praising and worshiping God. It has nothing to do with reproduction in the afterlife. It has nothing to do with filling the role of being the God to a future devil. I mean, the role that we give God is not buried anywhere in the term theosis. No one in their right mind would look at Mormon theology and say, oh, that's theosis.
Well, and Mormons certainly wouldn't.
No, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing is, if that's the least accurate of the two. The, you know, God of your own planet is more familiar to them than theosis.
Right. And the reason people pick up the term God of their own planet, like you said, is Mormons say that. You know, people on the street would actually say that out of their mouth, but they would never say, yeah, it's the theosis.
And you want to know the ultimate irony is if you look up the term theosis on the LDS.org website, you only get one response from the last 30 years, and it's an article comparing what Mormons believe to what first century Christianity believes. And so for Mormon Voices to say theosis is the basis of some sort of Mormon belief, right after they just got done proving that God of your own planet can't be that because it doesn't show up in search results, but then the one that is the direct belief doesn't show up either. I mean, it's just a load of crap. It's crazy.
Well, and the number one, there's a lot of bad apologetic techniques, and I smell another top 10 coming on here. But one of the things they love to do is say, you can't show me exactly where it says that. You can't speak authoritative. Only the brethren can speak authoritatively. That was said years ago. They like try to obfuscate every way possible. But when you look at that sentence there, it says definitively, Mormons believe in theosis. like the booming voice from God there saying that, when they get so bent out of shape when anybody else does anything even similar to that.
To me, here the bottom line is this. When an outsider says you believe that you're going to get your own planet, it sounds silly. It sounds silly to any outsider, and Mormons know that. Because I'm a dick, I made my dad watch at the Tonys, the I Believe performance, when he visited me. And after it was done, I said, what'd you think? He says, well, yeah, everything he said may be true, but when you say it like that, it just sounds silly. I'm like, exactly. And so instead of saying it, when somebody says, you believe you can get your own planet, instead of just owning it and saying, yeah, I do, and here's why, they try to weasel out of it, use weasel words and get around it and do things like President Hinckley did on the Larry King show.
Right, but why should they be embarrassed about something that they believe?
Because of everyone's reaction to it. Are you kidding me?
It's also the milk before meat doctrine. Like, somehow Mormons think if you learn these things in a certain magical order, it'll all make sense and not be silly. But if, like, somebody just takes it out of context or throws out a doctrine, it's like, oh, well, that's because you don't know everything that leads up to that. As if, like, there's this puzzle and it's this beautiful Mona Lisa smile of art once you have all the pieces in place, but otherwise it's like pieces of poo individually.
That's a good point, Bob.
Okay, let's move forward to number 8. This is from Brian Fisher, Focal Point Radio Show, September 2011. Once again, big time media. All right. Mormonism is not an Orthodox Christian faith. It is just not. ... It's very clear that the founding fathers did not intend to preserve automatically religious liberty for non-Christian faiths.
First part of the statement was good.
I think everybody.
Second part of the statement was obnoxious.
But it's an ignoramus statement that has nothing really to do with Mormons per se. I mean,
no.
He's throwing everybody under the bus, like Hindus and Buddhists and Wiccans and atheists and everybody, you know. But he's saying the founding fathers did not, and you know, that's this rhetorical trick that everybody does in Washington, talk about what the founding fathers had in their heads. But there's no bigotry involved in that by asserting that the founding fathers didn't want non-Christians to have certain rights. That's not a bigoted statement. It's stupid, but it's not bigoted.
Well, and amazing that they only use that as far. They only use that as far as Mormonism goes. If they really wanted to, if this group really wanted to make a stand, instead of just saying in their response, the dangerous fallacy of Mr. Fisher's legal argument speaks for itself, why don't they do what you said and bring up Islams and Buddhists and people who aren't traditional?
Well, and of course, he obviously was talking about Mormonism. So he's tying Mormonism into this bigger principle, which is that religious liberty shouldn't be extended to these sort of things.
It's just a stupid statement.
Yeah. Yeah. If they said the top 10 stupid things said, I don't think this would make the top 10 stupid things said either. But, I mean, all you Christians, all you right-wing Christians out there, can you go write me a 10-page paper on deism, please? Because you really are misunderstanding the founding fathers. They were not evangelicals. Please, for my benefit, go get yourself a copy of the Thomas Jefferson Bible, where he edits Jesus out of it, basically.
Not the miracles. Anything miraculous he edits out.
What I like about it is it's really short. It's like a pamphlet size. It's like 60 pages long.
Well, and this media is not mainstream at all. I mean, it's an evangelical radio program.
That's an excellent point. I mean, to say this is the media is a stretch. When you're talking about ministries.
Yeah.
This is a right-wing Christian radio station that's saying this thing. And then it made it number 8 on their top list. Okay, number 7. This is from Trisha Erickson, CNN.com, July 7, 2011. Yes, it is my opinion that an indoctrinated Mormon should never be elected as president of the United States of America. All right.
It is my opinion.
First of all, she begins with my opinion.
An indoctrinated.
Right. So I love their footnote. Mormons are no more indoctrinated than any adherent of any other mainstream system of belief. Randy, do you want to take that one?
First of all, you have to have a doctrine to be indoctrinated.
Well, I was going to say that I agree with her, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. You know, just because saying, well, everybody else is indoctrinating their kids too, that's not really.
Have you guys read that whole article?
No,
because she wrote a book called I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically about Mitt Romney. Can he serve two masters, his church and his office as president? And she's an evangelical Christian, ex-Mormon. And so it's such a bad interview. It certainly is an awful book as well. Because one of her main arguments is, you know, if you believe in false doctrine, you can't lead because the true doctrine is evangelical Christianity. I mean, it's just awful stuff. And actually the CNN that posted her interview had Richard Bushman give a response to her, and he went to the go-to, you know, that she left the church, but she can't leave it alone, which is what you get all the time. You know, that's what I mean, John. You're in
prime example,
case in point. Yeah,
exactly.
And if I remember too, that wasn't even broadcast on CNN. That was something that was put deep in their website, where it was passed around with my Mormon friends of, oh, you got to see this. But it was deep within their website. It wasn't even on the front page. It wasn't on TV. it was something where you had to know where to go to get to it.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things that, you know, we run around in all the same circles on Facebook. It was posted on, like, John DeLynn's site and commented on.
Yeah.
But yes, and you could tell it's not a verbal interview because they refer to the question written above.
There is a good point there, though, and I think the point that she is trying to make is that Mormons really are supposed to follow the prophet. I mean, you know, the primary song, follow the prophet, follow the prophet, follow the prophet. He knows the way. I mean, and it's just, that is indoctrination, to follow the prophet. And how is a president, how is a person who is under that kind of, who's thinking in that framework going to make decisions that contradict anything the prophet says?
Well, let's dig in that a little bit. Here's the definition of indoctrinate. To instruct in a doctrine, principle, ideology, etc., especially to imbue with a specific partisan or biased belief or point of view. So the difference between indoctrination and, say, learning science is science teaches you a methodology, and science will challenge you to challenge it, basically. If you go take a math class, they will challenge you on this page that they hand second graders to prove that it's not true.
Well, the Mormon Church challenges you to go prove that what they're saying is true through prayer.
Well, yeah.
But well, here's my problem with her argument is that you can make the same argument about Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann.
Absolutely.
They're fully indoctrinated in their fundamentalist Christianity, and that's certainly going to paint the way that they govern. But that's it's America. We're allowed to have different opinions on things. And her argument was that because he's indoctrinated in a false doctrine, unlike Rick Perry, who's indoctrinated in a true doctrine, he's not fit to govern.
It's a bad argument.
Well, and if you go back to the whole point here, this is supposed to be bigotry. So they're saying, she's saying, in my opinion, you shouldn't vote for a Mormon who's been indoctrinated in Mormonism. And they're saying, well, other people indoctrinate their kids too. but that's not a sign of bigotry. It's just saying, I don't like you're pointing out, I don't like your particular brand of indoctrination. Because indoctrination is to teach a doctrine, not a methodology. So of course Mormons indoctrinate their kids. People who believe in doctrines tend to indoctrinate people. That's a fact. They're following this definition completely. Okay. There's no bias there.
Okay, yes, I agree. But what the Voices people's argument is that Mormons are no more indoctrinated than other mainstream belief systems, right? I disagree with that. I think Mormons are more indoctrinated than most mainstream belief systems.
Well, I think it's hard to measure relative value of indoctrination, because if you parse this further, I mean, Mormons clearly have a much greater amount of weirdness in their indoctrination. I mean, we do have all of those things we've already talked about with planets and magic underwear. I don't know if we're going to get there or if I should be using it in that way, but there's just a lot of like bonus polygamy, polyandry. There's the still stuff about Mormonism that's just, you put it in the filter of indoctrination and it looks way worse than indoctrination of like an evangelical. I mean, it's the same type of process, but one is just with weirder stuff.
And I would say that the evangelicals are not the mainstream beliefs. I think I think of mainstream, you know, Christianity, they're not doing a ton of indoctrinating like Mormon children would receive.
You're thinking of like Lutherans and Episcopals.
Yeah. That's what I think of when I think of mainstream, not evangelicals.
Yeah, so if you stack rank us against like all the other religions in America, their argument, like they would have been better just not saying anything and letting the quote be ridiculous on its own, rather than like making it doubly as bad by saying, well, if you average it out, I mean, everybody else does it too.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but now you've opened it up for us to point out how our version is a little different than how everyone else does it.
Well, and I think the scary thing to other people is the idea that, you know, once the prophets have spoken, the thinking has been done. That kind of thinking that other mainstream belief systems don't really have.
That's a good segue to number six. This is from Warren Cole Smith from pathos.com. I don't know what site that is. I believe a candidate who either by intent or effect promotes a false and dangerous religion is unfit to serve. Mitt Romney has said it is not his intent to promote Mormonism, yet there can be little doubt that the effect of his candidacy, whether or not this is his intent, will be to promote Mormonism. A completely rational sentence. Let's talk about the word dangerous. Let me read you their response. Calling Mormonism dangerous and Mormons unfit to serve is plainly false and bigoted. Responsible journalists have recognized that Mormons are thoroughly mainstream in their modes of living and ideas.
What?
Responsible. It's the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Oh my gosh.
Because if you point out
he's no true Scotsman.
if you point out that Mormons are dangerous, then you're not a responsible journalist by definition. Set and match. But let's point in the word dangerous just a second. Mormons who go through the temple take a pledge. And they will pledge that they will give everything to the church, up to and including their lives, if so asked. That's dangerous. Now, Mormons will say, yeah, but they'll never ask you to do
it. They would never do that.
I mean, let's be perfectly clear. The Mormons pledge that they will give their life in the service of the church. To anybody else in the world, that's dangerous.
To me, the most dangerous place that Mormonism is to anyone is to a young gay kid. It's extremely dangerous to a young gay kid.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll give Randall that, but John, there are other people who pledge their lives to Christ and would do anything for Christ. There's extreme.
But Christ is imaginary. He can't tell you to go do something. If you pledge yourself to a church, they can ask you to go do something crazy, like Mountain Meadows. Jesus can't ask you to do anything crazy.
Yeah, if you were pledging your life to Jesus in the temple, that'd be one thing, but you're actually pledging your life to the church.
The church that Mormons themselves acknowledge is wrong from time to time. Let's assume for a minute the church is true. But everybody who knows anything about church history will acknowledge the church does boneheaded things, and those are just those are the ways of men. That's not God speaking. That the brethren sometimes just are bigoted themselves.
But the brethren are the church.
But we have no mechanism to differentiate that sort of stuff. So, and we have a bunch of old guys running the church who we have actual documented cases of senility.
It's true.
we have a potential that somebody flips their wig and goes and asks Mormons to do something crazy, and most of them won't, but a percentage will. That's dangerous. And I'm not trying to argue that that's going to happen. I'm just trying to say that the statement is not as bizarre as it sounds. That Mormonism can be a dangerous religion. Like I was just pointed out, it can be psychologically dangerous to certain, marginalizing gay people. They like to take young people and humiliate them sexually. Publicly scorn them, don't allow them to take the sacrament, don't allow them to pray. And those lists can go on and on and on in ways that the church is dangerous in people's lives.
But I don't know if really what this statement by Warren Cole Smith is saying, I don't think that this is really legitimate about Mormons. I actually don't think it's that dangerous to have a Mormon president.
No.
Or have a Mormon politician in any way.
I can see how this would be really offensive to a Mormon, though, because most Mormons look at their faith and their religion as just a wonderful blessing that brings their family closer together and teaches them really good morals. And to call them that dangerous, that would be offensive to me as a believer.
Well, and to call them dangerous. Unfit to serve.
And unfit to serve when Mormons have served in the U.S. Senate for 100 years
without
any craziness going on.
I think if there's a bigoted statement, this one might get close to
it. Well, I think it's inflammatory. But what I'm saying is it's a fairly legitimate point of view. I'm not saying it's a right point of view.
Okay,
but I don't think it's bigoted against Mormons.
He is saying that he doesn't think that a candidate that promotes a false and dangerous religion is fit to serve.
Brent, let me ask you a question. If there is a true born, native-born Muslim who believes in Sharia law, are they fit to serve in Congress?
That's a good question. It depends on how extreme they're going to take their
beliefs. The answer is no. Sharia Sharia law is at odds with the fundamentals of the Constitution. So I would say that it might sound prejudiced against Islam for me to say that, but I would say they're fundamentally not compatible, Sharia and English common law. So I think that's an example of that sort of statement. That doesn't make me a bigot against Islam. It may be bigoted against Sharia, but Sharia is not a group, like Zilpha pointed out. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the thing that really bothers me about this, I think, and the next one is the one that's really going to set me over the edge. But this one really bothers me simply for the fact of what you guys were talking about. The whole concept that it's a dangerous religion and that Mitt Romney is unfit to serve. And look, politics aside, Mitt Romney doesn't have a documented history of having mental problems. He doesn't have a documented history of being extremist in his religion. And I take offense to it because I'm sitting here and I don't get – look, you guys have tossed a lot of stuff at me and I don't get offended that much. But I take offense to something like this simply for the fact of are you telling me that me, just a lonely financial analyst at my company, is a dangerous person because I believe in Mormonism and that I'm going to do something – and I'm unfit if I want to run for city council or – Heaven forbid if I decided to run for president.
The statement says that if you were trying to promote a dangerous or false religion, then you would be unfit to serve. Not that you would be unfit to serve if you believed in a dangerous religion. That's what the quote says, that the person would have to be promoting that religion to be unfit. Well,
there's no history of Mitt Romney as governor of Massachusetts. He was pro-choice, for Christ's sake. when he was the Massachusetts governor.
Yeah, so, I don't think there's a problem with Mitt Romney here.
Here's the problem I have. I think Mormons are capable, intelligent, and tend to be good leaders. They tend to be a little misguided in their right wingity, but they can make good leaders. Here's the problem that I have, and this is John speaking. According to their own religion, or to Mormonism, we are all beholden to the prophet. According to Mormonism, we have to obey the prophet if the prophet gives us a call. Now, we have a documented case from Mitt Romney's very own father who released it when the brethren called him up and asked him to change his vote and he refused.
Delbert Stapley.
And so there are instances where we both know that, hey, Mormon politicians can think on their own, but B, the church does actually, in fact, try to influence Mormon politicians. So we have Mormon people in Congress, but a single congressman is not the commander in chief. The problem I have is as long as the church has that pledge in the temple that every member who's in good standing has to pledge to do whatever they're asked by their file leaders, that effectively, doctrinally, puts Salt Lake in control of the biggest military force in the United States. I have a problem with that. Until the church pulls that out, I personally don't think a Mormon should be president. Be in Congress, fine. They don't have the red button. The president, I have a problem with doctrinally. And it's not a personal issue that Mormons are unfit. It's a doctrinal issue.
I can buy that. Well, you're scaring me. I don't want Mitt. Never mind. He's scary.
But
I could see your point, John, and I could see Brandt's point. Yeah, and I could see both sides of the story.
But Brian, I mean, to acknowledge what you're saying, I can see that it's and I have felt this myself, because and we've skirted around prejudice. Of course, I'm an atheist. My little boy has started in the Boy Scouts. I can't go with him. They don't allow me to.
So. For real?
The Boy Scouts don't allow atheists, homosexuals, in atheists or homosexuals in the organization.
Do you have like a scarlet A on your forehead?
No, you sign a paper. There's a pledge. You know it's like they make it clear. You can go look it up on the BSA website. I'd read it to you if I had it here. But
I was a scoutmaster, so I know this stuff. But I didn't know. I mean,
so what,
you could get around it, right?
Well, you could lie.
Pretend.
You could pretend. You could do the John Huntsman route. what I'm saying is this sort of prejudice is unpalatable. It's distasteful. I mean, even saying those things, I have a bad taste in my mouth. And I think where Mormonism gets a lot of this is because Mormonism amps it up. They're more bombastic in their statement. You could probably go in the I don't know, the Presbyterian creed and find some weird stuff, but no one really like takes that stuff that seriously. A creed is sort of a kind of guidelines as opposed to the hard, fast rules that Mormonism puts on it. And that's what makes it rough.
Is it fair to say that if there was some reform, or if Brandt could somehow influence the way the church is run, this is just a problematic thing. Some of the things that you pledge to and do in the temple, I don't mean any disrespect, and that's a whole other conversation, but it does seem like we're one of the few religions, at least it's getting a light shone on it as brightly as it is right now, but that is doing things in a closed environment that was scripted from hundreds of years ago with minimal edits since then. You know, some have been progressively for the better, but there's just still this vibe of like authoritarianism, secretness, and this is going to bleed into the segue to number five, cultishness behavior that is just fundamentally at odds with some of the, you know, quote unquote founding father constitutional freedom fighting type of rhetoric that you get when you talk politics, right?
I honestly think that a lot of this is politics in general. I mean, if you look at a lot of these quotes, yes, they're within the last year, but I think the earliest one in all the quotes we're looking at comes from March, maybe. But anyways, they're within the last 6 to 9 months, and I think that's because the GOP campaign is really ramped up within then. But I think that's going to be something that, especially if hypothetically, if Mitt Romney gets the nomination and if he becomes president, that is going to be something that's going to have a microscope on it. And I think that's going to be something that the church is going to have to really take a stand on. If they're going to change some things some more in the temple, which has happened before, I'm man enough to say I like the way that I think it was either John or Zilpha said it about how instead of pledging yourself to a church, pledging yourself to Christ, there could be stuff like that coming. I mean, it's not uncommon for them to change based on public opinion, which has happened before.
Well, and to that point, you know, people worry, like I just verbalized, that if a Mormon is in the White House, and this is the same thing they said about Kennedy, right, with the Catholics back in the 60s, people worry that if a Mormon president gets in the White House, that Salt Lake will be running the Washington. It will actually be the reverse. If there is a Mormon seated in the presidency, whatever he says will suddenly become Mormon doctrine. I mean, just instantly. And that could be, even during the primaries, Mitt Romney has probably the chance that hasn't happened in about 80 or 90 years to really change Mormon doctrine, because Salt Lake will just bend over to whatever he says. This might be a chance to see some real reform in the church. And because if he says that, well, the temple is merely symbolic, that we don't take those words literally, it's a spiritual pledge, it does not translate into real, you know, economic fidelity or whatever, I fully believe that'll suddenly become Mormon policy.
Well, go ahead, Randall.
Isn't there a prophecy that the Constitution will hang by a thread and it'll be the church, will be the staff that the country leans upon?
Funny you should mention that. That's next week.
Nice.
White horse.
Sorry.
No, it's an excellent point.
But that would be great fodder for someone opposing Romney. Like, look, this church teaches that the Mormon Church will eventually take over the government. I think that's actually in the book of that girl, that lady. Yeah, that's good fodder.
Well, and not to be too political, but Romney has been very careful about pandering to the conservative base, especially the conservative base lately within these GOP primaries. It will be interesting to see how his rhetoric changes if he gets the nomination when he's going against Obama to try and draw those independents and those undecideds in. Because if he starts talking a little more openly about something like gay marriage, you might see some of the conversation shift within the church, because then you have a question of, well, this is what Romney's saying, and look at where he is as far as politics go. Well, how is the church going to respond to that?
Yeah, and in fairness to Romney, I think once he gets the primary nod, the issue of religion will sort of go away. It's not an issue with Democrats, so the Democrats aren't likely to bring it up. And you know, I think most evangelicals will hold their nose and vote, or they won't vote, which will ensure that Obama will get the presidency. But I don't think Mormonism will be as much of an issue during the final part of the race as it will be if Mitt, by a long shot, wins the presidency.
You guys are actually kind of giving me pause here because, you know, if it's Romney versus Obama, I vote Obama. But if Romney getting elected president can affect change in the church on homosexuality, I might vote Romney.
Yeah, I've had the same thought. Okay, number five. This is a quote from Robert Jeffress, Values Voter Summit, October 7th, 2011. And whenever you hear the word values, you know it's a right-wing thing. This is a mainstream view that Mormonism is a cult. Every true born again follower of Christ ought to embrace a Christian over a non-Christian. Yeah, that's just a bullshit statement. I've expressed my view. I use the term culty, but the idea that Mormonism is a cult is just an evangelical fighting word. This one is probably the closest thing to bigotry, but it's bigotry. Cult is a worldview, is a religious view of evangelicals, right? So it's part of their world outlook that Mormonism is a cult. Just like the Book of Mormon says there's only true churches, the Church of God and the Church of the Devil. And it goes into great detail how every other church is devilish. And in the temple, they used to have the devil hiring out a Protestant preacher. Is that bigotry? Kinda, but it's
Which is probably why they took it out of the temple.
Yeah. So I mean, this one is bigoted, but, you know, pot meet the kettle.
Well, to give, I've actually followed the story a little bit further when I was doing my research, and he actually softened his statement a little bit. He said Mormonism is a theological cult, not a sociological cult, like the Jim Jones cult. So he did soften it a little bit, but he's still a douchebag.
Yeah. Well, and going along with Randall, like when this story first popped up, I was just glued to it. He did an interview with Anderson Cooper, which is where Randall got that first part. And he goes on to say, first of all, this is a sociological cult, not a theological, or a theological, not a sociological cult. And then he says, and secondly, cults tend to look at other religious texts outside the Bible for their guidance. Mormonism, for example, certainly accepts the Bible, but it accepts the newer, fresher revelation in the Book of Mormon that came from the angel Moroni, supposedly to Joseph Smith. So for that reason, I'm saying it's a theological cult. I know that's a loaded term, and it has never been considered, Anderson, as a part of historic Christianity. Here's the problem that I had with the Mormons' reaction to this statement, because the media just blew up. The media called this guy an idiot. The media said, look, you're using blatantly loaded terms. But here's what happened within my own circle of friends. I saw people that were all of a sudden saying they posted a talk from Jeffrey R. Holland. They put the church's name out there on Facebook and said, see, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we have Jesus Christ in our name and we're not a cult because we believe in Jesus. And the example that I used with a lot of these people was you could start a church theoretically that you could call the Church of Jesus Christ of Killing Babies. And you could have as one of your theological tenets that babies should be killed. But you could kind of use the same argument that some of the Mormons were using by saying, well, see, we have Jesus Christ in our name, so we believe in Jesus and we're not a cult and we're Christians too. And the problem was they didn't understand the theological aspect of why people view us as non-Christians and why people view us as a cult.
Jim Jones, they were Christians. Didn't they grow out of Seventh-day Adventists?
Or, yeah, they were Christians.
Yeah. So, I mean, they started in Christianity.
David Koresh was a Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and obviously when you talk about like Jones and Koresh, you can talk about Brigham Young in that same breath, but not really Thomas Monson, you know.
And I think it's totally dependent on your definition of cult. And since he kind of qualified it as saying theological cult and he sort of explained what he meant by that, he wasn't saying it's the cult like people gather around and worship the devil and sacrifice cats. He was using it as this is a cult, as in terms of it's not mainstream Christian.
But he's being disingenuous. There are several like threads of what a cult is, but he's just using it as a curse word.
Obviously.
But he is using it against Mormonism. This goes to the point that I made at the top of the podcast. The calling Mormonism a cult is not the same thing as being a bigot towards Mormon people. It's a statement about the theology.
True, but if you think that Mormonism is a cult and Mormons are cult members, you will probably treat them with sort of disdain and you will be afraid of them. And therefore, you probably will, you would maybe seek to, you know, push them out of your neighborhood or get them out of your kid's class or something like that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So I'll grant that from now on, everybody who calls Mormonism a cult can be called a bigot.
Hey, no.
Hey, John.
Wait a second now.
There's a difference between being a bigot and kind of being an idiot. And this guy was just being an idiot. And the amazing thing was, he did all this, he got all this press, and then lo and behold, a week later, he's publishing a book. And so it was very curious to see the timing of all that.
Yeah. So you're saying it was well planned?
I think it was. He got a ton of attention. The other ironic thing was, you know, Mormons a lot of times want to have this very conservative outview on things, and they got to be right-wing and conservative. A lot of the more liberal outlets were the ones that were saying, you can't – in 2011, this is a dumb thing to say, and the liberal people were the ones that were having the Mormons back on this, not the Fox News types.
And I think there's here I'd like to insert a tangent right here, one that I may have done before, maybe not. But in the United States, we have discrimination laws, and you're not allowed to discriminate based on sex, race, physical characteristic,
age,
sexual preference, and religion. One of these things is not like the other. I believe strongly in the First Amendment that people should have a right to say whatever they want. But I do not believe that religion should be a protected class because the others are immutable characteristics. I'm born a male. I'm born Caucasian. I age to a certain point. There's nothing I can do about that. But religion is a choice. It's a matter of existential beliefs about the universe. And I don't think that should be a protected class, in my opinion. So this goes to the reason I state this is sort of underpins my whole point on this thing. It's really hard to be bigoted against a point of view because that's ultimately what religion is. It's a point of view. Now, it gets messy because of the one we talked about before, which is indoctrination, which is seven-year-olds who go around spouting pretty sophisticated theology, which they have no understanding of because they've just been – you know, it's just been crammed into their head. So I believe strongly in First Amendment rights, but I believe we should be able to discriminate based on what you say. So I don't believe that religion should have a free pass in terms of non-discriminatory clauses.
What about equal employment?
Yeah, I think it should be yanked out of there.
Because, yeah, it's in there.
And partly because I think I've mentioned this before, that no one in the United States is allowed to discriminate based on religion for employment purposes, except for religions who have a clause that they're allowed to do it with impunity.
Yeah, it doesn't seem quite
bullshit.
Right. It should go both ways.
Right.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Okay. That was a fun little side journey. You can all come back from the refrigerator now. All right. This is my favorite. This is my favorite one from this list. All right. Harold Bloom, New York Times, November 12th. I think it's kind of ballsy to accuse Harold Bloom of being a bigot, by the way. But anyway, the current head of the Mormon Church, Thomas S. Monson, known to his followers as prophet, seer, and revelator, is indistinguishable from the secular plutocratic oligarchs who exercise power in our supposed democracy. Yeah, that's great.
For right. definition's sake, plutocratic oligarch is the rule of the rich, basically,
yeah,
in short.
A plutocracy is a rule by the wealthy and powerful. And so what he's saying is basically the United States is run by wealthy, powerful people, and so is the church.
Well, that sounds bigoted.
Sounds accurate.
And Harold Bloom, by the way, is no ignoramus when it comes to Mormonism. He actually had a major effect in my life. He wrote the book called American Religion, The American Religion. And the book is about two religions, Mormonism and Southern Baptists. I don't know what you call the religion. And so he's done extensive research on the Mormon faith, and he's actually pretty, for a secular Jew or Jewish person, I don't know. He looks at Joseph Smith a lot more favorably than even I do.
Yes, he does. He is a friend of Mormonism quite often. And I think Harold Bloom was the one who called Mormonism the quasi-essential American religion.
He said something that was really, like, it blew my mind. He said, Mormonism tries to create a more divine man and a more human God. And he's actually, I mean, we talked about that before, but he's actually, yeah, that's pretty astute, in my opinion.
The problem I have whenever you talk about plutocracies is it's sort of tautological to say the powerful people are powerful. Of course they're powerful. They're in charge. So it's almost, in my mind, kind of a meaningless term. He's basically saying that the church is run, the way the church is structured, the people at the top are very powerful. That's what he's saying. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I just think believers would say, yes, they're powerful, but they're exercising the word of God. You know, they commune with God, and they exercise God's righteous dominion over his followers.
And they have a right to have all the resources that they need to accomplish that mission.
But saying that the Mormon church leaders, who are known as prophets, seers, and revelators, using our own language, are powerful, not really bigotry in my mind.
Not at all. And their response is basically, well, only a few Mormon leaders get money from the church.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I almost passed this one up.
There we go.
Does anyone know what kind of house Thomas Monson lives in?
His house is in Bountiful. Like it's probably worth between $400,000 and $600,000. So Bountiful is a nicer neighborhood. He's been in the house for a long time. It's not really that he's super rich that way. The problem is, because of some of the things we just hinted at before, that religions have special dispensation, and the biggest thing they have is they don't have to report their finances to anybody. So we do not know, except in a few instances, how much church leaders make. Now, their statement here, in their counter argument to Harold Bloom, is that
they receive modest stipends.
They receive modest stipends. Okay. So let's go to Exhibit A. In 1983, before we get to Exhibit A, let's go to Exhibit Alpha. So the church early on, you know, Joseph Smith set up this theology saying that that we should be a community, and no one should. He rejected the traditional model of the clerical order where they lived off the donations. So his idea early on that he let out of the bag very early was that everybody should work for their own hands, and it's buried in the Book of Mormon that you shouldn't basically take a wage as a pastor from the congregants. And then he spent the next like 9-10 years trying to undo that damage that he did there. But the way that the Mormons did really under Brigham Young and under Joseph Smith to some extent is that the church had clerical leaders, the 12 and the first presidency, and the church was also involved in secular areas. So they would own businesses. They might own what was the boat, the Maid of Iowa or whatever, on the Nauvoo, on the Mississippi. And so the church would have these two endeavors. So the model for a lot of years, the church still follows to some extent, is when you get put in the 12, you also get put on several board of directors of businesses the church owns. And then you'll get paid for those board of director positions. But they were all owned by the church. It's a big, massive shell game. So as soon as you became the junior member of the Quorum 12, you'd get on the board for Beneficial Life. And then you'd draw a salary as a board member for Beneficial Life. And then you get on the board for Union Pacific Railroad. And you draw a salary there, and on and on and on and on. And oftentimes the 12 were on the board of 22 different companies. And they were drawing a small salary from all those. And these board of directors wouldn't be board directors of 5 people. They'd be board directors of 40 people, because they would have all these church people on there who would be taking salary. So the church would then say, well, we're not paying our church leaders. But they would take their church leaders and put them in dual roles of clerical and secular business roles. to anybody outside the church, it's just a big shell game. The church owns all that stuff, and they're paying their leaders. That being said, the church actually paid a salary, and it came out because Paul Dunn, yes, that Paul Dunn, was sued. And in 1983, New York Times ran an article on this lawsuit where they discovered the salary of Paul Dunn.
From the church.
From the church. So he was a member of the 70 at the time. And this, I said New York Times, it's the Wall Street Journal, November 9th, 1983, reported Paul Dunn's church salary at $40,000 a year as a member of the 12. $40,000 a year adjusted to inflation 2010 numbers would come out to $86,397. Now, I don't know what their definition of modest stipend is, but I think for 99 for the other 99%, they don't count $80,000 salary as a modest stipend. Granted, that's a member of the 70. Now, we have other instances where the one that I like to quote quite a bit is Hinckley got really involved in the Hoffman affair, and right before Christensen's death, he guaranteed personal signatory spending power of $500,000, and he agreed to buy the Kinderhook translation, which was a forgery, and it never came, but he had agreed to purchase that for $150,000 of his own money. Now, this is Hinckley, who came in the Quorum of the Twelve in his mid-30s, and before that, he worked for the Deseret News, and he worked for the church as a publicist. So he never really had the big money connections there. He was a lifelong church member, and here in the 80s, he's able to produce $150,000 to buy a document, and there were other documents that he bought also under his own signature. We have the estate of Joseph F. Smith. When he died, it went to lawsuit among his children, and it was a huge estate, millions of dollars. Same thing happened with Brigham Young. When Brigham Young died, I think his estate was reportedly worth like $300,000, and that was like in 1877. So when these things like bleed out, we say these members of the Quorum of the Twelve and general authorities don't make a lot of money, but every time we get a glimpse into it, they seem to have huge assets under their control. And of course, the church buys their cars and their apartments and flies them everywhere, and so
pays for their food
and does all sorts of things. So they're not taking a salary, provides their security forces and on and on and on and on.
But they are taking a salary.
So, but to say that we are different, because this is where it gets really bad. The church has for 200 years been criticizing other religions for taking a salary,
for having paid clergy.
So you'll find this humble guy out in the country who's making, say, $40,000 a year, being the reverend of his church, and the general authorities are going around on their private Learjet that was given to him by Huntsman Chemical, with a security force in their black suits, driving around in their Lincoln Town cars, flying first class. Remember the story from Quentin Cook where he sat next to Mick Jagger or whatever? Mick Jagger's not riding in coach, brothers and sisters.
So
these guys are living the life of a U.S. corporate executive, and they're saying they're taking a modest stipend. Nobody but the believers are buying that. No one's taking that hook.
And I like this discussion, but really, it has nothing to do with bigotry, this statement.
Well, I think it's
I mean, going back to the original premise of the whole article, I don't even know why it's in here. I don't know why it's on this list, and especially not on number three.
My point is that the Voices guys brought this up. I'm trying to show you that the arguments they're using against this thing, what they accuse people of distorting the facts, of not representing things correctly and being bigoted, and they're distorting the facts right there when they say they're just taking a modest stipend. These are just things I just rattled off the top of my head. If somebody was to go do research or pick up a book, they could probably find more. That is a blatant distortion of the facts.
Well, and it's not bigoted at all.
Well, and it's not even the right conversation, as Zilpha's pointing out. It's just kind of ironic. Like, once again, if they just would have said nothing, it would have been better for them. They're digging their own grave by sidestepping the real issue, you know, that this quote supposedly is demonstrating by bringing up something else that has an even bigger, even more skeletons in its closet. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get how that helps them, but, you know.
What do you think, Brandt? Why did they include this quote?
I think because they don't like the fact that, like, I didn't say much because I can't say much to that, you know? The fact that you're made an apostle and we're going to put you on this committee and you'll get money there. And then, you know, we talked about how much we found that Paul H. Dunn was getting. And who knows if there's a, for example, if members of the 12 receive more than members of the 70, you know, there's not much you can say to even defend that. I will say this. I heard a story once, and I'm not sure if it's apocryphal or not, but there was a story once that the church did a study and they said, you know what, it would be better for us to buy black BMW cars. I'm not sure. The 7 Series, I think that's one of the really nice ones they have. It'd be better for us to buy black BMW 7 Series cars to drive everyone around in, because if you take a look at the maintenance versus the cost and how long we're going to have it, the BMWs work better. But we want to show that we're humble, we're just like you, we know how it would look, so we're going to buy black Chevys, black Chevy Malibus.
The church drives Corollas, Toyota Corollas.
Corollas. Okay. The problem is, on one side, I understand what they're doing there, but on the other side, it's like there's a lot of believers who treat these, they treat the apostles and everyone like celebrities. I mean, you go to a ward where an apostle is visiting and they're mobbed like celebrities. I've seen the most tacky things. People asking for their autograph inside scriptures.
Kiss my baby.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, part of the problem is we condone that. And the other part of the problem is the church isn't going to release their finances. So there's no way that they can really come out and say one thing or another. But I think that the article put this in there to say, no, see, the leaders are just like all of us. And, oh, we could look at this old story from Spencer W. Kimball and the old little house he used to live in. And it's like, you know, do people really believe that? I mean, really?
I know, but why did they include this in the anti-Mormon statement?
Well, and let me read the sentence again. Only a few Mormon leaders who serve full-time receive modest stipends. All other Mormon clergy are unpaid. So I want to give you another example. When I was in college, I had he was a dorm mate. He was in a dorm room a couple down from me. And his father had been called the year before to serve as the Thailand mission president. I think he had like 5 or 6 younger brothers and sisters. Now, this was sort of different because his father was in his 40s. I think this kid was the oldest. So I said, well, that must have been a hardship. He said, well, all of his brothers and sisters in Thailand were in private school. He said they lived in basically a mansion in Bangkok or wherever they were. You know, and he named off all these things the church was doing for them. The church like paid for flights back and forth between Salt Lake. So he said, well, you know, my little brothers and sisters are living this like opulent life that I never lived. So a mission president is a clerical position. So, and I know when I served in the San Diego mission, our mission home was in Rolling Hills with other mansions. It was a beautiful, opulent home. It was probably worth $several million back then. It'd probably be worth $8 or $9 million now. You know, like mahogany and chandeliers and it was a sweet setup. You know, the mission president drove a really nice car. So
and those are all provided by the church?
100% yeah. Provided by the church.
Sam and my mission.
Wow.
And I pointed out before that missionaries are technically to the IRS paid clergy. They're paid very poorly. But, you know, to say that's we true. Don't have a paid clergy is, and the reason I'm belaboring this point is because this is to the heart of the issue. And this is just like our planet's thing is that there's blatant misrepresentation. Just own it. Just say we have a paid clergy. It's just we also have a volunteer. It doesn't undermine the fact that stake presidents and bishops aren't paid to acknowledge that you have literally 500 paid clergy members. That's okay.
It would be nice to pay the bishops and stake presidents something for their time.
They used to. So it's not unheard of. It's not theologically out of the realm for Mormonism because it's happened before.
Well, and go ahead, Randall.
All Harold Bloom is saying is that Thomas Monson is indistinguishable from a CEO of a corporation.
Exactly.
Yeah, he is indistinguishable because, I mean, if Thomas Monson walks into the church office building, is it any different than a CEO of another major corporation? I mean, everyone pays attention. He's got security. He's in a suit. And the guy doesn't prophesy. He runs a corporation.
Well, it's worse than that, though, because a corporation has a lot more stakeholders through, you know, shareholders and a board of directors. And all this stuff.
Yeah.
If you look at Thomas S. Monson and the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, especially these 15 guys have complete veto, full control. Like the piggy bank here is billions of dollars and there's no check and balance. There is no, for as bad as corporations are on a different level, this is like a whole level above that level. So if you're criticizing the Mormon Church for being too much like a corporation, it's even worse than that. So, that's the issue that we're not even talking about, or that they totally sidestepped and didn't really, you know, they don't have a real rebuttal for. And well, I don't know the answer either. I mean, sorry, Brant, I keep deferring to you as if, like, you know, you're going to make it all make sense. But the fact that the church now has billions of dollars and 12 old white dudes that are borderline senile sometimes control all of that, like carte blanche with no oversight at all. What does that mean? Should that be an, I mean, we can reserve it for another conversation, but that is the real topic of this comment, right?
Well, and going along with that is the fact that the financials aren't made public. So right. The accountability isn't there. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a financial auditor for our state here in Michigan. So I see everything that's happening, and I can tell you this, at least in our state, everything's on the up and up, and everything that I look at and that I audit is for good, worthwhile purposes. There's nothing shady going on. And I'm not accusing anything of being shady, but as an independent financial auditor, I have a responsibility, if I see something going on, to bring that up. The problem is the church can sit there and say, we have internal independent auditors that are doing the auditing for the broad church as a whole, but they're not publishing that information. You know what I mean? And that's right. A big problem. But there's a couple of points I want to back up on. Number one, Zilpha, you asked, why is this in here? I think it's in here because you have someone that's a sore point for whoever is involved in putting this together. How dare you say, and I'm not saying that I'm them, but how dare you say that our prophet is this plutocratic oligarch? How dare you say that? How dare you, you know, like you guys were talking about, he's a CEO. How dare you say that? They're getting upset and offended. And instead of saying, okay, this is one person's opinion, they're crafting it as being bigoted. I think number two, with the whole concept of the paid clergy, that was something that has always bothered me about CES and the fact that they have paid institute and paid seminary teachers within highly populated LDS areas, because we don't have that out here. And when I heard that that happened in Utah, as I got a little bit older, I said, wait a minute, but we're supposed to be non-paid, and granted, they're not clergy per se, but they're getting paid for teaching the gospel. And isn't that everything that we say in the church that's not supposed to happen, getting paid for teaching the gospel?
Yep.
And they're not paid well, though.
No, not at all.
And the church flip-flops on this all the time. I'll give you an example. My wife was a translator for General Conference, and it was a language, you know, that wasn't – there weren't that many people who could – do a good job of it. They paid for it for a while, then they came back and said, no, we're not going to pay for it anymore, but we need you to do it anyway. And then they came back and said, yes, we are. And they do all sorts of stuff, and it's just, you know, somebody's whim. I don't know who makes those decisions, but there's no checks and balances. There's just no knowing how the corporation runs. It's just all a black box, and I can see why somebody on the outside working for the New York Times would want to call attention to that. That's exactly what newspapers do, you know. If somebody's running for president who is part of this institution, which has no accountability and no visibility, of course, you know, the New York Times is going to want the rest of the world to know that. And that's not anything to do with bigotry. That's just information sharing.
Well, anyway. To be clear, he doesn't work for the New York Times. He's a Yale professor of humanities.
Okay.
He's quoted in the New York Times.
Okay, let's move on to number three. This is a quote from Michael Ruse from the Chronicle of Higher Education, November 30, 2001. Quote, the theology comes across as total barmy. We can't become gods with our own planets, and the practices strike me as creepy. No coffee and tea is bad enough, but the underwear. You know, I think we've covered this, but the word comes across, he's clearly expressing his opinion. We've talked about the things like coffee and tea, you know, these are things that just from the outside look kind of weird. And he's just saying that.
Well, he's not saying that Mormons are crazy. He's saying the theology comes across as barmy, crazy.
And the practices strike me as creepy.
They strike me as creepy. The right. Practices, not the Mormons, the practices.
And this is what's most troubling, to go back to my one of my original points, is that this persecution complex goes so far as to somebody to have an opinion about Mormonism that's negative is in the eyes of these guys, these Mormon Voices type guys, as de facto bigotry. You're not allowed. This is basically expressed by putting this on the list, is expressing this as a thought crime. You are not allowed to think ill of the Mormons. Otherwise, you're a bigot.
He's not even thinking ill of the Mormons. He's just thinking...
Well, he says the theology. That's the first thing he says.
Yeah, I know. But that's not the Mormons.
Right.
And, yeah, we already talked about becoming gods with their own planets. Coffee and tea, that doesn't make sense to most people for a good reason. And the underwear.
I mean, he didn't say magic underwear, right?
No, he says the underwear. So they can't even say, we don't have magic underwear. All they say is, well, we do have these underwear, you know, called garments.
Well, and what else are you going to call garments? You know, if you're speaking to a quote unquote outsider who doesn't understand it, what else are you going to call them?
Right. Yeah. How could they possibly have said, I have a problem with that without using the inside term? You use the word underwear.
Let me ask you this. If they would have said magic underwear, would that be cause for a little bit of uptightness from the Mormons?
I personally don't like the term magic underwear. I don't like when people use that because I think it's, I think it's the same sort of thing I'm accusing these guys of. It's obviously trying to distort to make a point. Now you could.
But if you're a comedian, I mean, that's the whole thing you do.
Well,
you distort to make a point.
Yeah, but if a comedian says, "All right, Mormons have magic underwear," okay, right. They get a pass.
But if a politician
or an evangelical does, you know, then you
give a pass to evangelicals?
No, I don't. I don't give a pass to those guys. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
I think the term. I don't like that term because it's not. It's not 100% accurate. Now you could argue about the technical definition of talisman and imbuing things with power and stuff like that, but I think people who use the word magic underwear aren't thinking down that line. They're just trying to ridicule.
Now, and I'll be honest, it's cheap. Like it's not even funny. It's not. You're not thinking outside the box at all. If you're going to make fun of Mormons, at least get some balls behind it. Do something better than just the same tired crap that we've heard for years and years and years.
Hey, yeah. But that first guy that said magic underwear, now that was a clever comedian.
Amen. Say things like the Mormons shouldn't have control of the red button. All right.
Well, I do want to say anything. Grab the average Mormon, any Mormon off the street, right out when they came out of the chapel, pull them aside and tell them all about Lord Xenu. And ask them what they think about that. And if they say, that's ridiculous, that's a crazy thing to believe, bigot!
Yeah. Yeah.
Or ask Mormons or other people what they think of Jehovah's Witnesses, not celebrating Halloween.
Bigot!
Yeah. Okay, number two. This is from Christopher Hitchens, all right, one of the Four Horsemen, from Slate Magazine, October 17th. Mormonism is one of the most egregious groups operating on Mormon soil.
American.
Oh, one of the most. Oh, on American soil. Mormonism is the one. Mormonism is one of the most egregious groups operating on American soil.
What I think pussyfooted around what he really wanted to say. One of the most. What is he? A general authority? Come on, use the superlative the right way. It's either the most or it's a bland statement. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, and he's missing his egregious what.
Yeah, exactly.
Like egregious just means like it's outstandingly bad on something, but he doesn't say it's egregious on what area, you know?
I think he's what he's talking about, because Nietzsche talks about good versus evil and good versus bad. And good versus evil is like, doing something good versus Hitler. Good versus bad is just, there's an argument that's just so terribly bad. That's what Nietzsche's talking about. And I think what he's talking about egregious is Nietzsche's definition of what something that is bad. Not because it's evil, but because it's just a ridiculous argument.
Yeah, I mean, Hitchens has talked about Mormonism and other aspects, and he just believes that it's nonsense. And I think that's what he's having here. But once again, he's not saying Mormon people are nonsensical people. He's saying that the theology is nonsense.
Yeah.
And he even says Mormonism. Well, it's quoted in brackets here, so they're filling in the words. But to their very front, it's. You can't have a Mormon defense league against Mormonism and still get that pass for your anti-bigotry.
Yeah, and the rebuttal is from the Mormon Voices people is this obvious hyperbole slanders 6 million American and 14 million worldwide Mormons. And, I mean, slanders.
Slanders.
Yeah, and that goes to my thought crime thing again. You know, if you think Mormonism is not logical, then you're slandering the Mormons. You're not allowed to think that.
Egregious is a pretty hefty word. Egregious.
That's the way Christopher Hitchens talks.
To
a secularist, Mormonism is ridiculously bad. I mean, the guy was a con artist.
If you're going to defend it, then you don't just say, you know, mommy, somebody called me a bad name. You need to do more than that. You need to talk about, you know, there's holes in this argument. You talk about humanitarian aid, education, community support groups. There's plenty of good things you can put a spin on why Mormonism isn't egregious. But you know, for being a defense league or whatever they're calling themselves, this is just a piss poor job. It's not defending anything.
Especially because they're not even taking the right context with this sentence. Hitchens is trying to make the point of how much of Romney's Mormonism is going to affect his ideology and his worldview. And here's the entire sentence. Unless he, Romney, is to succeed in his dreary plan to borrow from the playbook of his pain-in-the-ass predecessor, Michael Dukakis, and make this an election about competence, not ideology, he should be asked to defend and explain himself and his voluntary membership in one of the most egregious groups operating on American soil. He's basically saying, this is obviously a force that's in your life. You need to defend yourself and explain yourself. And perhaps I'm looking at it with rose-colored glasses, but basically saying, how is this going to affect – if you're a legitimate candidate for president, how is this going to affect what you're going to do leading the country?
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought this was a pretty harsh article, though, by Hitchens, but it's an opinion piece.
Well, it's Slate and it's Hitchens. You know, mm-hmm. Once again, if you're going out of your way to look for offensive stuff, if you're snooping around there, you know,
and it's all relative. Like, read anything else. You know, Hitchens has written about any other organized religious organization. Anyway, it's still really hard to find anybody who's anti-Mormon because, you know, that's like their bread and butter. That's like really what turns them on in life. I just don't know if that profile exists. I think all of these are just people who, they just disagree in one way or another, like they disagree with anything in life, but Mormonism isn't as special as maybe Mormon Voices wants it to seem like it is.
And isn't this kind of the way that Hitchens, this is his writing style. It's a little bit bombastic. Right. It's a little bit over the top. And that's the way Slate is too. I mean, we're not talking about the New York Times. It's Slate.
Right.
There's a difference.
Yeah. And to Bob's point, Hitchens is anti-religion. Mormonism just happens to be in the crosshairs.
Mm. Right.
All right, number one, Bill Maher, October 15th, 2011. And in the Deseret News article, they had a picture of Bill Maher there. By any standard, Mormonism is more ridiculous than any other religion.
All right. Nice.
What I wanted to see when I went down to the footnote was the religion that they nominate as more ridiculous, because there you win the argument. Because if you're not ridiculous,
that is more ridiculous.
You know, say, well, look here at the Episcopalians. But they said 332 scholars disagree.
332, and I looked at the link.
Those Mormon scholars testify.
Yeah, those scholars are not necessarily scholars. There's like a computer science guy.
There are a lot of good scholars in there, but if you read their articles, they tend to say, yeah, but I'm a Mormon because of faith.
I struggle with it.
They don't – if you say, oh, this guy's a microbiologist, read his article. His article doesn't say, from the point of view of microbiology, Mormonism is true. They usually say Mormonism is good.
Well,
and
a lot of them
like
did say, I have, you know, struggled with this.
Yes.
But I choose to believe it. I have faith.
But why does 332 scholars mean anything?
I have no idea.
If I can bring them 10,000 scholars who agree, is voice is going to say, oh, we were wrong? Does 332 have some sort of – a magical bearing? No, and that's ridiculous.
I don't know if this is relevant, but it looked like at least 3/4 of the scholars were over age 60. I mean, they had pictures of them.
And a lot of them came from BYU, and none of these testimonies would be borne over the pulpit. They're highly liberalized versions of a Mormon testimony.
But it's to me, it's a complete diversion. That response, 332 scholars at Mormon Scholars Testify,
disagree that Mormonism
is Bill Maher.
Ridiculous.
Bill Maher is not attacking this from an academic point of view. And he has been very clear. This is something he said over and over again. The Mormonism, theology, history, you know, things like Kolob and that sort of stuff is ridiculous. And
ridiculous means unreasonable.
Are there any religions that are more ridiculous than Mormonism? I mean, I'm asking. I don't
know.
Well,
that's the real conversation. That, you know, that'd be a fun little exercise, and maybe the Mormon Voices guys just really weren't up for that, because then there's this circular logic of maybe they're going to be bigoted in their own way as they throw Scientology under the bus, you know.
But I don't buy that Scientology is more ridiculous than Mormonism.
And even if it is, so what?
The cocoa beams or whatever other nonsense is in Pearl Great Price is suddenly less ridiculous than Lord Xenu.
But it's not really an objective standard. Like, you still want to just see them, like, have an arm wrestle or duke it out in some way. Because it's like nonsense versus nonsense from Bill Maher's perspective. I'm still curious to know why Bill Maher thinks one is more ridiculous than the other. Because
Well, the rest of his statement, it's on his show. This is just a snippet of his segment there on Mormonism, is he's saying, look, you got this guy, and he's using a magic stone to find buried treasure for years, and he's going to court for it, and I think he said he was convicted of it. I'm not sure if that's true. Was he at least convicted once?
He was convicted once in 1926.
That's what I thought. So he said he was a convicted con artist, and then all of a sudden he comes up with this religious book and this religious movement. Isn't it obvious to everyone that this guy is a con artist and this was just part of his behavior? That was his angle, was the history that most Mormons don't even know about. I mean, how many correlated Mormons know that Joseph Smith used a magic stone to find treasure in a silver mine that he then used to translate the Book of Mormon?
But then you take that and you have that guy in one corner, and then in the other corner you have L. Ron Hubbard, who's a science fiction author creating a religion based on, you know, the fantasy series that was a bestseller. I mean, which one sounds more ridiculous? I don't know.
The stone.
We'll have to take this as a challenge to objectively measure which is the most – well, come up with some standards. So anybody wants to help out on this project, let me know. We have to come up with some measurements on ridiculosity, and then we'll be able to settle the question once and for all.
Well, the definition is extremely silly or unreasonable.
But I think that even a lot of believers – and I'll let Brant respond to this – would acknowledge that there's things that aren't sensical, they're not logical, but we accept them on faith, and then the hope is that someday when we have further light and knowledge, then it'll all make sense. But I think most enlightened believers don't argue that Mormonism is completely logical and
reasonable.
They would say no, it's about obeying the gospel and about faith. That's what they would say are the two main principles. Mm-hmm.
Yep, well, and because we have such limited understanding now, we can't possibly hope to understand the big picture.
Right.
Well, and God wants his people to be peculiar.
And I think if we had a throwback, if we had 19th century Mormon theologians, they would have said, yes, it is sort of illogical. Isn't it wonderful? But this is how we know it's true. And then bear their testimony. I mean, that's a better response than just saying 332 scholars disagree with you, bitch.
Right.
Well, and the worst part is, it's like they're grabbing their own crew. They're not even saying, well, this is a group of scholars that met at the Library of Congress to discuss religions, and this is what they said about Mormonism. No, it's their own backyard that they're grabbing. This is one of the worst arguments I've ever heard. And they say that this is the number one most bigoted statement of 2011. I mean, and you can't even come up with a better response than 332. Yeah.
Is that Brandt? Authority. Is that Brandt with that argument?
Yeah, that was me.
All right, guys. Well, I think we've pretty well
ripped it to shreds,
taking this one apart. You know, I really think I've said this before, and I'll state it again. I think Mormonism is interesting, and it does have feet. Like, there are arguments for Mormonism, but it's not in trying to make it appeal to people like Christopher Hitchens. Christopher Hitchens and myself reject Mormonism because we reject the supernatural. So you've got to argue the supernatural exists. And Mormonism has some decent arguments for the existence of the supernatural. But this is not the way. You don't try. It's like Mormonism goes from being defensive to trying to tongue kiss different positions all the time, trying to get cozy up with the logicians, cozy up with the evangelicals, and they just need to sort of own their own, get comfortable in their own skin.
Stand on those feet.
Yeah, do that. All right. Well,
the late Christopher Hitchens, by the way. Yeah. God rest his soul.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. I was laughing at the irony of, not that he was dead. I don't know. I hope that didn't come up. The irony of the God rest his soul comment. Okay. Well, any last thoughts? Brant?
I'm good.
All right. Well, as always, the discussion continues, and there's always more hilarity to be found on the FAIR websites. I invite you all to check them out and farms if you like the same sort of arguments wrapped in a lot of big words. And head over to our simple-worded MormonExpression.com. Oh, what announcements do we have? It seems like we've got stuff going on. There's the big camping trip coming up in Utah to the weekend of July 20th.
Monte Cristo
you need
campground.
To get your reservations. We have a limited number of camping spots, so get those into mail at MormonExpression.com, and we'll get you on the list.
But we have a lot, so fear not.
Oh,
I mean, we have a lot of camping spots available.
And we just
a big party.
Announced this week, of course, this winter, our Mormon Excursion winter excursion this year was a cruise. Next year, it will be in Vegas. I think the weekend of March 15th, we will have a block of rooms at a hotel, and we'll have an official Mormon Expression recording that you can attend and a meet and greet. So start saving your pennies so you can fly out to Las Vegas. You guys are all going to be there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that cruise ship fall over on its side?
Holy. That would be awesome.
No, it wouldn't. It'd be awful.
As long as it doesn't go completely over like the Poseidon Adventure, I'm okay. All right. The discussion continues, like I just keep saying. And thanks.
MormonExpression.com.
Everybody for participating.
Bye.